The grief is palpable. Avon neighborhood, the scene of a heartbreaking memorial. Neighbors, loved ones, and the wider community honoring two young lives lost in a weekend crash. Good evening. The brother and sister were struck Sunday afternoon while playing in their driveway.
The family releasing a statement late today as friends show support in the wake of this unthinkable tragedy. CTV's Sean Lethong is live on Athabasca Drive with more. Sean.
Well, Michelle and Nathan, what may have been the most heartbreaking moment of the day was when the father of these two young children returned to his house. He, at one point, screamed, punching one of the pillars in front of his house, and he also made an offering to his children to hopefully come back.
A small plate with cookies and toast, a hairbrush, a glass of milk, in the place where a brother and sister were struck by a car. Offerings placed by the children's father today, the gesture explained by a family friend.
Do you know how we give the treat to kids? If you finish your homework, we'll give you this. If you can't do this, then we'll give you something like that. They are in that hope because they are still in that shock that will bring that kids back into their lives.
Messages left at the memorial and family friends identifying the children as 10-year-old Anaya and 4-year-old brother Jax. Family friend Don Patel says the children's parents cannot accept this loss.
They still didn't want it to believe that young Jax and Anaya are no longer with them.
In a statement released this afternoon, the family says, "We are extremely traumatized by the tragic loss of our daughter and son. The past few days have been extremely difficult for our family. We appreciate the prayers and thoughts of those grieving with us." Offerings from the community are massive. Messages to the family, a poem to the children, toys, stuffed animals, candles, and flowers. A new offering every minute.
There are no words. It hurts so bad.
Parag Shah brought his son to pay respects to their close friends.
Even my own children, just the memories of them together, it's beyond words.
The memorial, which was started by neighbors, is bringing more and more like Crystal Commande and her kids Stella and Dylan, with no connection other than grief.
I don't know. It's just so heartbreaking. I can't even speak.
Or Savannah Gillies, a mother of five herself, saying a prayer.
You know, I pray that these parents try to find comfort some way, somehow, which I don't know how that would be.
People taking the time to travel from out of town.
We live in Markham.
I'm from Woodbridge, and she's my only. Last night when I found out the sister had passed as well, then that's it. I lost it.
And there's 9-year-old Lola Spencer, who came along with her 8-year-old brother Thomas.
Because our mom wanted us to remember not to drive recklessly because we could kill someone.
The two children were struck by a black Mercedes that veered off the road at noon on Sunday, with 4-year-old Jax dying yesterday morning and Anaya dying last night. The driver of the Mercedes, a 16-year-old from Richmond Hill, is facing multiple charges. For the family who are grieving while a memorial continues to grow in front of their home, whether it be from friends, family, or the community, the message is the same.
You're loved. We're here. Anything you need, anything, anytime.
All kind offerings, but none, at this time, can give the family what they long for.
And you can see this memorial has simply become huge. People in the community are gathering around right up to this minute. They've been coming in all day. As for the driver, he will make his first appearance in court tomorrow. Reporting live, I'm Sean Lethong. Michelle, I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, Sean. And our online team is tracking every development with this story. Visit ctvnewstoronto.ca for full coverage.
Turning next to a pair of scary incidents in Brampton, both involving children falling from home windows. The first near Picard Lane and Banting Crescent. Police say the child involved has life-threatening injuries. Meanwhile, just hours later, a child fell from a window at this home on Fanshawe Drive. We're told their injuries are minor, and police believe both incidents were unfortunate accidents. Turning to the COVID-19 situation and a sign of optimism with lower case numbers.
Ontario is seeing its lowest single-day count in nearly 2 months, but that figure comes with fewer than 23,000 tests processed in the last 24 hours. Public Health Ontario is reporting 1,616 new cases in its most recent update, the lowest number since March 24th. That brings the province's total to more than 513,000. 17 more deaths are linked to the virus, putting that figure at 8,506. And more than 479,000 cases are considered resolved. Meanwhile, as other provinces unveil plans to reopen sections of the economy, attention is turning to Ontario.
Tonight, we've learned the familiar color-coded framework will not be involved. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
And Nathan, members of the Progressive Conservative government privately have admitted to me that the color-coded framework was so watered down by the Ford government before the third wave that the government has no choice but to abandon it. The Ford government says it is working on a new reopening plan, but that that plan is not yet ready for prime time. The steady decline of the third wave of COVID-19 has given rise to economic reopening plans across the country. Today, Quebec revealed its plans to unlock the economy, including which sectors will come first and the benchmarks to initiate a reopening. But here in Ontario, the reopening plan isn't ready.
I would say very soon. We have been working with the Chief Medical Officer of Health and the medical experts on a safe and careful reopening of Ontario.
Here's what we know so far. The government says it is ditching the color-coded framework for a new plan, one that's based on vaccination numbers, cases per 100,000, and the rate of transmission. While the province doesn't have a firm date to initiate the reopening, sources tell CTV News the rough timeline will see it all begin in June, targeting a fully reopened economy in mid-July.
It's also sector-specific, looking at what different types of sectors could perhaps be reopened and what their specific needs and timelines are as well.
And the government says the business owners who purchased PPE and plexiglass won't need to purchase anything else.
I think most of them are well-positioned to reopen when that time comes and it's safe to do so.
But the government is facing increasing pressure to also reopen outdoor amenities. A coalition of organized sports sent a letter to Premier Doug Ford today, calling on him to reopen outdoor facilities immediately using the existing protocols.
We've had comprehensive return to play safety protocols and plans in place since last summer. And in there, we don't allow social gatherings. We don't allow carpooling. It's really just bring player to the field, train or compete in a controlled manner and then leave. There's no gatherings around.
There are 3 million people who participate in sports in Ontario, but the government has not said when they'll field their request. And I've been told with those who have knowledge of the developments that the Ford government is currently looking at a couple of scenarios for where to go with its reopening plan. As of right now, though, we still do not have a date for when that plan will become public. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
All right. Thank you, Colin. Looking at the COVID numbers, tonight's regional breakdown looks like this, with 472 new cases in the city of Toronto and 360 in Peel region. There are 116 new cases in York region, with 114 in Hamilton and 102 in Durham. Halton region has 60 new cases, with 47 in Niagara. On the vaccination front, this is an exciting moment for thousands of Ontarians now eligible to get in line.
Children and teenagers among those now getting their shot in some places. Across the province, the Ministry of Health says more than 109,000 doses were administered yesterday. And more than 7.2 million shots have been given out over the course of the rollout. More than 442,000 people in Ontario are considered vaccinated, having received both required doses. CTV's Mike Walker is live now with more on the rollout expansion. Mike.
Well, Michelle, dozens and dozens of people are still in line at this pop-up clinic at John Paulini Collegiate in North York. It's one of the few pop-up vaccine clinics offering the vaccine to students after Health Canada recently approved the Pfizer vaccine for children 12 and older.
Good morning, everybody.
For the first time in weeks, students lining up at school.
All the appointments this morning.
Eager for the opportunity to get the COVID-19 vaccine.
I'm excited because COVID has been hard on like my family and not being able to see my friends.
15-year-old Charlotte Bertina, the first to get the shot at this pop-up clinic at John Paulini Collegiate Institute in North York.
It's had a lot less stress and worrying about how it'll spread and like people knowing that they are protected.
This vaccination clinic, a partnership with Women's College Hospital, more than 900 students between the ages of 12 and 17 from select schools in the neighborhood are eligible.
It means a lot because I haven't been able to see like my friends a lot, and it will be like more safe for my family.
And what they've been telling us is that they are not feeling safe in school right now in the pandemic, and that they'd like to be back, and that they want to feel safe and secure.
One of three pop-up clinics targeting children in Toronto hotspots today after Health Canada gave the green light to administer the Pfizer vaccine to children as young as 12.
It's important to get them vaccinated, not only to prevent them from ending up sick in hospital, but to prevent transmission and ultimately to keep schools open as well. And we know that these areas that we're serving right now, they have the highest rates of COVID.
Some students now rolling up their sleeves on the same day the province expands eligibility to all adults province-wide to book appointments at mass immunization clinics.
Most of the young people want to take the vaccines.
The more people who can get it, the better, because, you know, it protects everybody.
The expansion coming a week earlier as the province receives a major influx of vaccines. Toronto is adding 120,000 appointments at its city-run clinics for June to meet the surge in demand. Health experts say this is a pivotal point.
Greater protection to the individual, greater protection to the community, which all contributes to lower rates of COVID-19, lower hospitalization, and gets us back to what we remember in the pre-COVID-19 era faster.
Back at the pop-up clinic, it's not only students who are relieved.
I got my first shot probably about 6 weeks ago, and my biggest concern has always been the kids, especially with all the variants. So this is great news for them.
Another layer of protection and one step closer to normalcy.
Now, the Ministry of Health tells us nearly 253,000 appointments were booked through the provincial booking system by 3 o'clock this afternoon. Officials with Women's College Hospital plan to continue these vaccination clinics for anyone 12 and older who live or work in M hotspots tomorrow and Thursday here at John Pulaney Collegiate. Reporting live, I'm Mike Walker. Michelle, back to you.
Thanks, Mike. And with so many Ontarians now allowed to book their appointment, the question becomes, will supply meet demand?
For some, the wait for a first dose will still be weeks. CTV's Natalie Johnson reports.
It was booked in my calendar. I set my alarm.
35-year-old Kathleen Dubay celebrated with a latte to go this morning after successfully booking her vaccination appointment at a mass clinic.
It was a little far geographically. I was hoping for something that I would be able to potentially walk to.
But Dubé's first dose is now set for a relatively soon June 9th, and she says,
putting it into perspective, I'm really blessed and pleased to have these appointments set up.
The virtual queue was nearly 40,000 people long when the clock hit 8 a.m., estimated wait time of more than an hour right off the bat. The provincial portal warned of limited appointments, but users who were online early did secure spots.
I was really trying to get to the convention center downtown, but that one was completely booked. That one was booked quite far in advance for the end of June. So then it just gave me the option of the Congress Center next.
Knowing that I actually have the opportunity to go and get it, I feel pretty good.
Kevin McNeil called into the provincial phone line and had quick luck booking, avoiding the massive online lineup to get into the site.
A little scary because that's a lot of people to be booking a vaccine.
Some cities like Hamilton acknowledge that there may be limited or no appointments available at mass vaccination clinics. And although some users called the process such a nightmare with no appointments nearby, a whack-a-mole game for time slots, Toronto was able to add 120,000 new appointments spread between its 9 immunization clinics between June 14th to July 4th. A relief for anyone who was able to secure a spot.
I feel accomplished that I finally have it booked.
All adult Ontarians finally eligible to at least book a spot for a shot. Natalie Johnson, CTV News.
Just ahead, a terrifying turn while trying to enjoy a cup of iced coffee and the panic that quickly followed. That story coming up in moments. But first, Lindsay Morrison's here with a look at the current conditions. How are things outside, Lindsay?
It's been another very nice day out there, Nathan. Lots of sunshine, humidity still low, but temperatures in the mid and upper 20s this time around. Winds, they're pretty light. They've been coming out of the south and west today for the most part. Sustained around 20 kilometers per hour here in the city of Toronto. Look at the temperatures. Again, into the mid 20s. Toronto managing to climb to a daytime high of 27. And there really isn't a big difference today, when you look at the communities closer to the shores of Lake Ontario, it's still pretty mild. Through the overnight hours tonight, we are forecasting a low of 14 degrees. That's pretty warm. And as we make our way through the next couple of nights, conditions will become a little more uncomfortable for sleeping. But that's not all. Heat and humidity building, along with the potential for thunderstorms. We'll talk all about it coming up in your forecast. For now, Nathan, back to you.
All right. Thank you, Lindsay. Next to the unwelcome discovery, leaving more than just a bad taste in the mouth of of a Tim Hortons customer in Port Colborne.
Taking a sip of her iced coffee only to find a screw in the drink. CTV's Beth McDonnell reports.
Carolyn Wells and her daughter say they were talking and enjoying iced coffees from the nearby Tim Hortons last month when Wells started choking.
I thought I was dying. I couldn't breathe. But my daughter jumped up. She got behind me and she tried to give me the Heimlich maneuver.
So that wasn't working. So I started like beating on her back. And then finally it just comes up and I was like, what the heck?
They say this screw is what came up. A terrifying experience that also turned into one Wells says the company didn't take seriously. Wells says she first reported it to the local restaurant before getting a phone call from the store saying they found where the screw came from.
She went and looked at the back ice machine, and I guess up back in the ice machine, a screw was missing, one of the screws that looked like the screw that I had choked on.
With no update a few weeks later, Wells says she called Tim Hortons' head office in Oakville. She says she filed a second report because they were unaware of the incident. Wells says the owner of the local restaurant then called her.
I guess she gave me an apology, told me, you know, this kind of stuff does happen, said that she could offer me a $100 gift card, but she feels that would be just a bribe. So then she said the most she could do is buy me lunch.
In a statement, a Tim Hortons spokesperson says, "We were really sorry to hear about this guest's experience. The restaurant owner and their team apologized after being contacted by the guest and conducted a thorough investigation to understand what happened. It was determined this concerning situation was an isolated incident at this restaurant. The restaurant owner has been in touch with the guest and has addressed the situation directly." Wells says her family means everything. Her son has autism and today turns 10. She's grateful to be alive and for her daughter's heroic actions.
I feel blessed to to have her and that she was able to do that for me.
Both not impressed with how the incident was handled.
My mom almost died and they're like, hey, we'll give you a free lunch. Like, here you go, slap in the face.
Wells says despite the close call, she won't give up iced coffees.
I'm going to be a lot more careful in what I put in my mouth from now on.
Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
Still ahead, two Hall of Famers teaming up once again and making history in the process. We hear directly from the two women now in charge of player development on the Toronto Maple Leafs and what they're bringing to the table.
At least 25,000 Canadians have now died from COVID-19. And as we reach that grim milestone, efforts continue to fight the virus with more vaccines. A total of 4.5 million doses are arriving in Canada this week. That is the largest weekly shipment yet. 9 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine are expected to arrive in July. The National Advisory Committee on Immunization now says the Pfizer shot is safe and effective for adolescents. A Mississauga company is getting $199 million in federal funding to expand its manufacturing capacity. Ottawa says Resilience Biotechnologies will be able to produce up to 640 million doses of mRNA vaccines. Meanwhile, the government suggests 75% of Canadians will need to be vaccinated before our land border with the U.S. reopens. CTV News has learned the border ban on non-essential travel is being extended until at least June 21st. The Prime Minister says he has known for weeks that Major General Danny Fortin is being investigated.
But Justin Trudeau claims he did not know any details. That's despite Fortin overseeing arguably the most scrutinized and most important job the government has right now. CTV's Annie Bergeron Oliver reports.
For 2 months, Major General Danny Fortin led weekly vaccine briefings, all while a sexual misconduct complaint was making its way through national defense. A complaint the Prime Minister today admitted he knew about for weeks before Fortin stepped aside on Friday.
In regards to this situation, it is being led and followed up appropriately by appropriate authorities and military leadership. In situations like this, those authorities can make a determination to inform me in my office which they did in this case a number of weeks ago.
But during that time, the prime minister says he never asked for details into the nature of the investigation and still doesn't know what the allegation is.
I have not been given a tremendous amount of details into this case because that would not be appropriate.
Sources say the military investigation stems from a formal complaint filed with military police in March, alleging a historical sexual assault. The incident, sources say, allegedly dates back 32 years to early 1989 at Royal Military College Saint-Jean in Quebec, when Fortin was a student. Fortin's lawyer says his client denies the allegation and still has not been formally told the nature of the investigation or the allegation he faces.
What we see with a number of senior leaders now facing allegations is what happens when you have a culture that's been described as conducive to sexual violence and sexual misconduct.
Replacing Fortin at Public Health is Brigadier General Krista Brody. She was seconded to Public Health along with Fortin in November after serving 32 years with the military, including deployments to Bosnia, Afghanistan, and with NATO. Annie Bergeron-Oliver, CTV News, Ottawa.
And CTV News has now learned that Defense Minister Harjit Sajjan was aware in March of the investigation into Major General Danny Fortin. So were other senior officials.
Canada added its voice to the international plea for a ceasefire in the Middle East. Ottawa says it will work with other countries to de-escalate the conflict. Israeli airstrikes are continuing. Hundreds have been launched since the hostilities began last Monday. The Jewish state says it's targeting Hamas militant infrastructure. The Gaza Health Ministry reports at least 213 Palestinians have been killed, including 61 children. Militants in Gaza have fired more than 3,400 rockets at civilian targets in Israel. 12 people have been killed there, including a 5-year-old boy. With no end in sight to the fighting, Palestinians in the region staged a general strike today. It was called by leaders of the Palestinian community inside Israel, which makes up 20% of the country's population. Back here in the GTA, and the renaming debates taking place in many school boards and other places.
CTV's Scott Lightfoot has more on some of the changes being considered.
The signs have already been changed, and with the ceremony tomorrow night, it will be made official.
And it's just such a fitting tribute because she was such a light, not only for women, but for Muslims and for people all over the world.
What was formerly Vaughan Secondary School is now Houghton Nelaya Secondary School. The name and legacy of a Somali-Canadian journalist will replace that of an 18th century slaveholder.
Stakes and situations were different years ago, but now we know better and we can do better. And we can make changes that respect everybody so that everybody feels included.
The move to reconcile the present with the past stretches across the GTA. Yesterday, trustees in Durham Region voted to form committees tasked with considering changing the names of two elementary schools, one in Pickering, named after Canada's first prime minister, the other in Whitby, named after Canada's most recent governor general. And at Ryerson University, a task force is hard at work trying to determine how the school should deal with the legacy of its founder.
The reality is that this is a complex conversation that is trying to better understand our community and how they are impacted by the legacy of Egerton Ryerson.
A 2-month-long survey of current and former students and staff was completed earlier this week. The task force will present a detailed report to the university's administration in the fall.
I think what's really important for everyone to understand is that these topics are deeply personal and that these conversations are incredibly important and they're different for everyone. And while it may be a simple answer for a person about what should be done, we are a community of people, and reconciliation work really depends on us coming together.
And coming to terms with the past in order to better support leaders of the future. Scott Lightfoot, CTV News.
For weeks, golfers have been teeing off on the province over the closure of many outdoor activities.
And as health experts consider a loosening of the rules, courses are watching closely. CTV's John Musselman reports.
Derrydale Golf Club in Mississauga has been a family-operated business for more than 50 years. Normally, this 12-hole course would be packed.
obviously it hurts.
Today, the fairways and greens are empty. Owner Melissa Wooder says golf courses have spent thousands of dollars to make sure everyone is safe. That includes plastic dividers and power carts and no clubhouse access to limit contact.
They come in, we check them in, we get their name, their number, their contact information. They're screened before entering so that we know they have no COVID symptoms whatsoever.
Golf was shut down as part of a provincial stay-at-home order in April. Premier Ford says he's not opposed to golf, but he said last week that mobility and post-round drinking is an issue.
There's nothing wrong with golfing. The problem is the mobility. Then after golf, they go back, they have a few pops. That's the problem.
That has nothing to do with golf. Those people are going to do that regardless. We have eyes on the course at all times. We have eyes on the parking lot at all times. We pay people just to be in the parking lot to make sure that nobody's breaking the rules.
The science table has already stated that outdoor activities like golf pose much less risk of transmission than anything indoors. Golf courses were one of the few outdoor activities that operated successfully last summer.
For all ages, my mother plays at 91 years old. And my youngest nephew is 10 and he plays.
We would never go a day without people saying thank you because they need to get out. They need to do something safe.
Health Minister Christine Elliott says outdoor activities like golf could reopen on June 2nd or possibly sooner depending on how the COVID numbers look in the days ahead. Wooder continues to pay her ground staff to keep the course in shape so it's ready to welcome golfers back as soon as possible. John Musselman, CTV News in Mississauga.
From golf to hockey, and as we wait for the puck to drop on the playoffs for the Blue and White, the Leafs have made two big moves off the ice and made NHL history.
Two women are now leading the team's player development department, both with impressive hockey resumes, and one recently adding a medical title to her name. CTV's Raheem Ladani joins us in studio with more. Raheem.
Well, Nathan and Michelle, Dr. Haley Wickenheiser, as she'll now be referred to as, continues to show why she's such a great Canadian role model. Well, now she's been promoted within the Leafs organization, and her second in command is also a familiar face.
Danielle Goyette over the line, waiting for teammates to catch up. Wickenheiser scores!
They were in sync on the ice for years. Now Dr. Haley Wickenheiser and Danielle Goyette are once again teammates.
Kind of a 1-2 tandem. Then I played for Danielle for several years at the University of Calgary. She was my head coach. And then I said to her, now I'm your boss. So
the Toronto Maple Leafs promoted Wickenheiser as the team's senior director of player development after joining the organization in 2018. Her first move was bringing in Goyette as her number two.
I love working with young players, like developing young players. I'm pretty detail-oriented with skills and skating.
Goyette spent the last 14 seasons coaching, and like Wickenheiser, has also been inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
I don't know that I see it so much as, you know, searching for women, as you're just trying to hire the best person for the job.
The Leafs are the first NHL team to have two women lead their player development staff. A big win, says head coach Sheldon Keefe.
That unique combination of elite talent, elite intelligence, and elite work ethic, and all those things shine through.
Adding to that combination is that Haley is now officially Dr. Wickenheiser. She earned her medical degree in Calgary over the weekend and is working with the University of Toronto to complete her residency.
What I've done so far in the last 3 years in medical school, I think has been much harder than what I'm about to do right now because I'm able to be in one place.
This all comes as the Leafs gear up for their playoff matchup against Montreal. Awkward timing for Goyette, who grew up a Canadiens fan.
I can't change my French accent, but I can change the team I cheer for.
As her allegiance now lies with the Blue and White. Now, Goyette and Wickenheiser are not only directors of player development for the Leafs, but also for the Marlies. Now, as for the Leafs, Game 1 against Montreal goes Thursday night. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Michelle, back to you.
Thanks, Raheem. Still ahead, honoring the tenacity of purpose and the man determined to see a shift in Canadian broadcasting, ensuring greater diversity across the airwaves.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, if you have a house, chances are you have home insurance. But if you rent, do you have tenant insurance? Not everyone does, but there are some good reasons you may want to. We look at some of the pros and cons of renter's insurance. All of that story just ahead.
Today was our warmest day of the year so far. We've said that a lot recently and probably will continue to through this week. Toronto climbing to 26.9 degrees. That is warmer than yesterday by just a couple of degrees. It is well above the seasonal norm of 20, but it's not quite record heat. Over the next couple of days, we have a few opportunities to break some records. I've got my eye on Friday and Saturday specifically. I'll show you what the forecast is suggesting with a full look at your 7-day forecast. CTV News will be back in 2 minutes. Stay with us.
If you own a house, chances are you have home insurance to protect yourself in case disaster strikes. But what if you rent?
Unlike auto insurance, tenant insurance is not mandatory, but there are some good reasons to have a policy to safeguard yourself and belongings. Pat Foran has the details on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Thanks, Michelle and Nathan. It's hard to know how many renters have tenant insurance, but many landlords now require it as a condition of their lease. Some tenants might think their landlord's insurance will cover their belongings if there is a loss, but that's not the case. Gurpreet Kasala and her daughter here are newcomers to Canada and recently moved into a condominium to rent. They were advised to get tenant insurance and after checking it out, decided it made good sense.
These are unprecedented times and this is, you know, such a thing happening is obviously unexpected and that leaves you at a loss of what to do and where to stay. So I think that's a very big plus.
Tenant insurance will cover the loss of your belongings in case of a flood, fire, and other disasters. It will also reimburse you if your items are stolen from your unit or even out of your car, depending on the policy.
Just because you're renting a place from, you know, a landlord and they have their own form of insurance, you're not covered under them.
Matt Hans with RateHub.ca says tenant insurance covers furniture, clothing, and most belongings, provides funds for temporary living expenses, and liability insurance in case of accident or injury in your unit, or if your actions damage another unit.
On average, about $15 to $25 a month, but there are instances where you could see that a rise above that amount.
Your monthly premiums will depend on factors like how much you have to insure, where you're living, your claims history, and the amount of the deductible. If you have expensive bikes, jewelry, or collections, you may also pay more. The best advice is to shop around and check the policy carefully.
Renter's insurance is fairly standardized, although coverage can vary. Bottom line, make sure you understand your policy, what's covered and what's not.
Kasala said after weighing the pros and cons, she feels it's a worthwhile expense.
With all the options of what it does cover, it's worth it.
It's something you hope you never need, but is a safety net in case you do. And whether it's tenant or home insurance, you should have an inventory of all your belongings. The easiest way is to take photos or video, but it's preferred to have a detailed list with model numbers and receipts. It should be updated and kept in a safe place. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
What a Tuesday evening in the city right now. 27 degrees. This is glorious.
Yeah, I'm loving this. And 30 on the way, Lindsay.
30 on the way. Heat and humidity building today. It felt more like late June as opposed to mid-May. And by the end of this week, it could be feeling like the middle of July all of a sudden. Weather is brought to you by Train. For home comfort, cooling, and clean air, it's hard to stop a train. As mentioned, a beautiful evening out there. And as we make our way into the overnight hours, we're forecasting a low of 14 degrees. Now, I know what you're thinking. That's not so low. We're actually above seasonal when it comes to the overnight lows as well. Could be uncomfortable for sleeping. I think some are maybe considering putting on the AC for the first time this season. And if you don't do it today, you might do it tomorrow or maybe the day after that. Tomorrow's forecast high, 27 degrees. How does a repeat of today sound? Mainly sunny skies. We might see a few fair weather clouds start to develop here and there, courtesy of a low pressure system, which I'll show you in just a moment. But look at our upper air pattern. This is certainly indicative of perhaps our first 30 degree day of the season so far, happening by the end of this week. I've got my eye on Friday, but Saturday is looking pretty warm as well. Here's a current look at the satellite and radar. Not much to show you. Again, there is a low pressure system, which might give us a little bit of cloud spillover into the day tomorrow. High pressure, though, should hold strong in keeping us dry as we make our way, though, into Thursday and then into the day on Friday, we see potential for maybe a couple of pop-up showers or thunder showers. Best chance for this to happen is going to come as early as Thursday morning, even more so into the afternoon, and then once again potential as we make our way into Friday. Here's your 7-day forecast. Friday is the one where we could hit 30 degrees, but there's potential over the long weekend as well. A little bit of instability in the atmosphere means a chance of showers just about every day. We cool down as we make our way into Victoria Day Monday. Now, there is some exciting news about the limited edition Princess Margaret Cottage Lottery to Conquer Cancer to tell you about today. Three incredible grand prize cottages are available to win this summer. One on Georgian Bay, one in Muskoka, and this $1.4 million stunner in the Kawarthas on Buckhorn Lake, all built and designed by Linwood Custom Homes. Plus, there's an early bird prize along with cash and loyalty prizes too. Megan Stovall McKnight is with the Princess Margaret Cancer Center, one of the top five cancer centers in the world, and she says this lottery is going to sell out fast.
I think we have an incredible community of supporters across Ontario that support Princess Margaret through the lottery. And, you know, it's been a hard year for everyone. What an incredible way for you to be able to spend a safe time this summer with your family and friends while contributing to such an important cause. You know, cancer has not stopped because of COVID, so neither have we at the Princess Margaret. And we need every dollar from every single one of these lottery tickets in order to keep the fight against cancer strong at Princess Margaret.
Some of the loyalty prizes include luxury trailers, cars, vacations, boats, and electronics. You can get your tickets at princessmargaretlotto.com or by calling 1-866-631-1234. That's your look at the weather. Nathan, I'll send it over to you.
All right, thanks, Lindsay. Also tonight, signs of optimism surrounding a Canadian-made COVID-19 vaccine. The developer is taking another step forward as they eventually seek final approval.
It could be Canada's first homegrown vaccine against COVID-19.
And it's showing promising results in recent testing. Our health reporter Pauline Chan has more.
While Canadians have been learning about messenger RNA, a brand new technique for creating vaccines used by Pfizer and Moderna, Medicago is developing yet another technique called virus-like particles.
So they spontaneously form these virus-like particles that have a plant cell envelope with hundreds of these little spike trimers sticking off their surface. So they're about the same size and shape as the real virus. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why the immune system responds to them as strongly as it does.
The particles are grown in a robust Australian weed, a member of the tobacco family. The particles teach the body how to develop antibodies, but do not introduce any actual coronavirus particles into the vaccine recipient. Medicago has completed phase 2 trials, with results showing the vaccine stimulates 10 times as many antibodies as those produced in a recovering COVID-19 patient.
Antibodies can be highly protective. The higher the titer, the more likely you are to protect against variants as well.
Phase 3 trials involving 30,000 volunteers have already begun in Canada, the US, the UK, and Brazil, with several other countries also scheduled to participate. That's the final step before Health Canada makes a decision whether or not to approve the vaccine, perhaps by the end of summer.
Dr. Brian Ward says it's a significant achievement for a company as small as Medicago, plus they're building a factory in Quebec.
That factory will have the ability to produce between 500 million and 1 billion doses of this vaccine, for example, for the next pandemic.
Pauline Chan, CTV News.
He was a master of deadpan comic delivery. Hollywood is mourning the loss of Charles Grodin.
You guys are the dumbest bounty hunters I've ever seen!
Grodin passed away today at his home in Wilton, Connecticut, from bone marrow cancer. He was 86. Grodin appeared in a number of notable films, including Midnight Run, The Heartbreak Kid, and The Woman in Red. He also starred on Broadway in the long-running 1970s comedy Same Time Next Year. Denim Jolly is credited with giving many Canadians their big break in the media business, including you, Nathan.
That is true. Along with many others, I got my start at his radio station many years ago. And now the much-lauded philanthropist, businessman, and activist is being recognized for his life's work. CTV's Andrea Case reports.
I am a very lucky, very blessed person. That's an understatement, but in reality, Denim Jolly made his own luck.
And I call it tenacity of purpose. When you set your mind to something, don't give up.
In the 1950s, he came to Canada on a student visa. But after graduating from McGill with a Bachelor of Science degree, he was sent back to Jamaica. 2 years later, a friendship with ties to the Canadian consul secured his trip back to Canada. He worked for the city of Toronto and was a high school science teacher.
Education was not for me because I love the kids, I love the school, but they didn't love me.
On the advice of his father, he went into business, but he says in the 1960s, banks weren't keen on giving a black man a $5,000 loan.
Someone co-signed a loan for me, and I bought a rooming house on the campus at the University of U of T. And from there on, I went into nursing homes and medical laboratories and then I bought a community newspaper.
Through sheer determination, the Order of Canada recipient, activist, millionaire, businessman, and philanthropist helped change the face of Canadian broadcasting.
Applied for a radio station to the CRTC. Took me 12 years and three tries. And then finally we got Flo, and the rest is history.
In 2001, he founded Canada's first black radio station, Flow 93.5. This weekend, the 86-year-old will receive the G. Raven Chang Award at the University of West Indies Toronto Awards for his life's work. Andrea Case, CTV News.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
I pray that these parents try to find comfort some way, somehow, which I don't know how that would be.
Updating our top stories, a memorial for two young siblings fatally struck by a car in their Vaughan driveway Sunday. Friends of the family say the parents are struggling to accept the horrific loss.
I would say very soon. We have been working with the Chief Medical Officer of Health and the medical experts on a safe and careful reopening of Ontario.
Sources tell CTV News we might see our economy begin to reopen next month, but whenever it happens, there will be no color-coded framework. The new plan will be based on vaccination numbers and rate of transmission.
It is being led, followed up appropriately by appropriate authorities and military leadership.
The Prime Minister says he was told weeks ago there was an investigation into Major General Danny Fortin. But Justin Trudeau claims he didn't know any details. CTV News has learned Defense Minister Harjit Sajjan also knew.
Don't forget to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video or breaking news, let us know. Attention is turning to a possible loosening of pandemic rules in Ontario.
And many are curious about sports and fitness. That's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by co-anchors Nick Dixon and Jackie Crandles. Jackie, you're going to be speaking with some sports organizations that are making a push behind the scenes.
Yeah, those voices that are calling for sports fields in Ontario to reopen, they are growing louder. Some of them, the voices behind sports like volleyball, tennis, and golf in this province, they have penned a letter to the premier, basically making their argument that these recreational activities should resume in the province before June 2nd, which is when the stay-at-home order is expected to be lifted. We'll find out what kind of conversations they've been having with the folks over at Queen's Park.
And sticking with sports, Nick, Kyle Lowry gave his final news conference of the season with the Raptors today. You're going to be looking at his impact on the city and the big question, what lies ahead?
Yeah, was that his final news conference as a Toronto Raptor? We don't know. He was pretty evasive when it came to those questions today. But a lot of people look at Kyle Lowry as perhaps the most influential athlete in Toronto in the last decade or so. He brought a championship to the city. He was the heart and soul of the Raptors franchise. We've got a panel ready to go to talk about Kyle Lowry, whether he'll stay or whether he'll go.
All right. Thank you, Nick and Jackie. CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was up to $82.92 U.S. American benchmark oil was down 78 cents a barrel to close at $65.49. And the TSX Composite Index gained 32 points to close at 19,507.
After the break, logging on to The Bright Spot and socializing safely a program offered to local seniors seeing incredible success.
It's time now for Toronto Together, and a virtual community creating important connections.
The goal, to engage isolated seniors during this global pandemic.
It's almost like a family. They wave to each other. They say hi. They encourage each other to go to different programs. It's actually, it's quite wonderful to be a part of.
The YMCA of Greater Toronto launched the Bright Spot about a year ago to encourage safe social interactions. The program offers a variety of online activities, including fitness, trivia, and a book club.
All the staff at Y who are handling the Bright Spot, my hat's off to them. They're one incredible bunch of people. Just fantastic, you know. I mean, it's a godsend, you know. I mean, if it wasn't for the Bright Spot, I don't know what I would have done during this pandemic, you know. It has saved me.
The Bright Spot offers 35 activities a week and has logged more than 900 hours of programming so far.
Well, if you like today's weather, you're going to like what's to come this week. Bring us up to speed, Lindsay.
Well, this whole forecast feels like a bit of a bright spot, aside from the fact that over time it's going to become a little bit muggy, a little uncomfortable. And in the long-range forecast, we do have showers and potential thunderstorms, but all is clear on the satellite and radar. Here's another look at tonight's forecast lows. Tomorrow, a pretty comfortable day, at least compared to what's in store for Thursday and Friday. So make sure you enjoy some time around home, maybe go for a walk around the block. But slather on the sunscreen, because those sun's rays are strong. 7-day forecast looks like this, unsettled but hot as we make our way toward the end of the week. Nathan and Michelle, I'll send it back to you.
All right, thanks, Lindsay. Be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
And you can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight with Nick Dixon and Jackie Crandles begins momentarily on CP24.
For Lindsay and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.
Night.